minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 167 of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. My name is Andy Herman, and we sort of have a pretty big show for you today. It has obviously been announced that the Green Bay Packers are going to be hiring Tennessee Titans offensive coordinator Matt LaFleur as their next NFL head coach. Obviously a very big deal. And to join me today in this kind of exciting announcement, this exciting news, is two of our Pack-A-Day podcast regulars. My name, of course, is Andy Herman. I'm a writer for Cheesehead TV. You can follow me on Twitter at Scotty Sports. And joining me is Zach Jacobson, another writer for Cheesehead TV, and of course, one of our Pack-A-Day podcast regulars, as well as Dusty Evely, another one of our Pack-A-Day podcast regulars, and a featured writer and podcaster on the Pack to the Future podcast as well. Gentlemen, we have a brand new head coach of the Green Bay Packers. How the heck are you doing? Zach, let me start with you. How are you feeling, buddy?
Well, I can tell you one thing. It was not what I was expecting. I don't think it was really what a lot of people were expecting. I know Josh McDaniels was the one guy that it seemed like the Packers were really honing in on. There was that mutual interest on both sides. He turned down the interview with the Bengals. He had interest with the Browns, but they never took that interview. It seemed like the fit was there, and he was going to be back for a second interview whenever the Patriots were eliminated, whenever they finished that divisional round game. It seemed like he was going to be back head to Green Bay for that second interview. But it makes sense why the Packers wanted to kind of knock out their candidate early and kind of tackle him while he's there, because now they get to focus on assembling their staff. They get to get ready for the whole scouting process, get ready for the combine at the end of February. And you know, he has that offensive pedigree working in Los Angeles under Mike Shanahan tree with, you know, and Kyle Shanahan in Atlanta, or not Atlanta, but he worked with Matt Ryan in his 2016 MVP season with the Falcons. So, you know, it kind of hit me in a different way that I was kind of more surprised than anything, but it was a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. Dusty, how are you feeling, man?
I'm feeling good, man. You know, like Zach was saying, I mean, I kind of I had talked myself into McDaniels. I had LaFleur as my – I can't remember the ranking. I had him as my two or three pick as far as kind of who I wanted as the head coach. I talked myself into McDaniels just for a thousand different reasons. For a lot of the stuff that Zach said, I wasn't high on it to begin with, but it looked like that's the way the train was rolling. And so I just kind of started looking into it a little bit. You know, he had the failed stint in Denver, but that was 10 years ago. He had the Indy thing last year, and we still don't know all the details around that. There was just some question marks about him. The more and more I thought about him with that kind of failed stint and the lessons he seemed to have learned from that, just in interviews and just kind of things he had been saying, it seemed like he'd really grown quite a bit. And so I kind of talked myself into it. So LaFleur was a complete shock to me because I thought it was funny, the shift, man. If you watch Twitter at all, it went from McDaniels is the guy. And then earlier today was he may not be the sure thing, but he's still the front runner. And then like 2 hours later was, okay, it looks like it's LaFleur. Like it was such a hard shift. But after, you know, 15 minutes, I was fine with it. I mean, you know, Zach, you mentioned the Matt Ryan MVP season. He was also the QB coach in Washington for RG3's rookie year. Mm-hmm. And not to mention, you know, like you said, some of the stuff he did in LA. And so it's hard to tell. I was talking about to Andy about this before the show. It's hard to tell from a head coach perspective because I like what he's done offensively. I kind of like the looks he gives. I love the places he's been, but he's never been a head coach, and it's tough to tell. You know, being an offensive coordinator, being a quarterback's coach, being whatever, I don't know that can fully prepare you for what a head coaching job entails. So it's going to be interesting. You know, obviously none of us can know that, but we can assume that since the interview, they hired him, that the interview went well, that he answered the questions, but they liked him. I don't know. Just looking at this from a pure, what could this mean for the Packers standpoint? I'm over the moon, man. I'm really hyped about this.
Yeah, it's an exciting time. It's an exciting moment. And we'll obviously have a lot to break down. I'm going to go over that full resume in just a moment. Before I do so, I do want to give another huge shout out to Michelle Bruton, who we had on yesterday, who kind of perfectly called this a day in advance. It was, you know, perfect timing. We had a chance to talk to her and her about her article that she wrote about Matt LaFleur. If you haven't had a chance to check that out, make sure to do so on the Packers Wire. It's a fantastic article, and make sure to check out the podcast from yesterday as well. Again, perfect timing, and we'll obviously be covering him in great detail today, but if you're even hankering for more, definitely go back and listen to that episode as well. I also want to send my thank you and apologies to both Janelle Mackey and Matt Frelick. They were scheduled tonight to talk about Joe Philbin as a potential coaching candidate for the Green Bay Packers in our part five of our coaching series. It turns out we only made it through part four before they hired a candidate, obviously Matt LaFleur. And they now have one of our hidden episodes or unknown episodes that will forever go unpublished, I guess. We've got, I think, three or four of those now. Zach, you have one of those out there as well. Maybe someday we'll release all of our, you know, cave of podcasts that went unreleased due to random circumstances. But Janelle and Matt did a great job putting that whole podcast together. And unfortunately, it became outdated very quickly. So huge thank you to them. And make sure to check back with them in a couple weeks when I'm sure there's going to be a ton of new things to talk about. But thank you and apologies to both Janelle and Matt. Before we break down the hire even further, I do want to break down that full resume for Matt LaFleur. Of course, he's 39 years old, and you guys went through some of this stuff already. He was a quarterback and wide receiver in college and had a couple stints in the Indoor Football League as a backup quarterback and as a wide receiver. In the Indoor Football League, he actually played for the Omaha Beef. I think this is probably the most important thing that's going to come out of this podcast today. Do you guys know what the mascot's name was for the Omaha Beef?
I don't know, Beefy?
Yeah, I'm going to kind of lean towards something beef related.
It is Sir Loin.
Oh, that's good.
That is fantastic.
Wow. It is really, really good. And they have a all-male dance team, the yes. only all-male dance team in indoor football, and appropriately named the Rump Roasters. So that is your Omaha Beef knowledge for the day that will, you know, forever go on in history with Matt LaFleur. But anyway, on to more important things. He started kind of his coaching career at Saginaw Valley State in 2003, where he was an offensive assistant. 2004 to 2005, he then became an offensive assistant at Central Michigan. 2006, a quarterback and receivers coach at Northern Michigan, then went on to be the offensive coordinator at Ashland, then the offensive quality and control coach for the Houston Texans under Gary Kubiak, and that was his first interaction with Kyle Shanahan as well. From 2010 to 2013, as you guys mentioned earlier, he became the quarterback's coach for the Washington Redskins, again working with Kyle Shanahan, this time under the head coaching job of Mike Shanahan. In 2014, he became the quarterback's coach at Notre Dame under Brian Kelly. Interestingly enough, DeShone Kizer was a freshman at the time. Mm-hmm. 2015 and 2016, he was the quarterback's coach in Atlanta, once again working with Kyle Shanahan under the head coaching job of Dan Quinn. 2017, he became the offensive coordinator for the LA Rams with Sean McVay. And then in 2018, he took the offensive coordinator position with the Titans under Mike Vrabel. The reason he made that lateral move, of course, was so that he could call the plays in Tennessee, where he was not calling the plays in LA the previous season. So some of his strengths, of course, and again, you guys mentioned a couple of these already. He was there in 2012 as the quarterback's coach for both RG3 and Kirk Cousins in their rookie years. RG3 had a fantastic rookie season before, in my opinion, Mike Shanahan kind of ruined him before playing him injured in the postseason. And he also was there for the early years of Kirk Cousins' development. 2016, he was the quarterback coach for Matt Ryan's MVP and really his best season of his career and, of course, their Super Bowl season. And then really in 2017, that breakout for Jared Goff, he was the quarterback's coach the offensive coordinator for that season. And, you know, the year prior, Jared Goff had been basically considered a bust, and he and Sean McVay come along and really kind of turned Jared Goff and that offense around. 2018, he became the offensive coordinator again for the Titans, seventh in rushing yards this year. He increased Marcus Mariota's completion percentage by almost 7%, easily the highest of his career, and also basically increased his passer rating by 13 points from a season ago as well. Of course, being mentored by the likes of Gary Kubiak, Kyle Shanahan, Brian Kelly, Sean McVay, some great things on his resume there, but there's also some reason for concern. He was in his lone season as offensive coordinator this past year in Tennessee. He was tied for 22nd in offensive DVOA, which again is an advanced analytic. I'm not going to break down too much here. 25th in yards, 29th in passing yards, 27th in points, 16 passing touchdowns to 12 interceptions, 47 sacks against, which was a huge increase from Marcus Mariota's previous season, 21st in passer rating. And then I think some major questions, you know, how much of his success was due to McVay and Shanahan versus, you know, LaFleur himself. And then maybe was the Green Bay or whoever was going to hire LaFleur, were they maybe trying to search a little bit too hard for the next Sean McVay rather than just trying to find that next really good football coach? So I think things, those are some of the advantages that he has, some of the question marks that he has, but kind of going through all of that, going through the resume, going through some of those concerns with Tennessee. You know, Dusty, I'll start with you. Where do you kind of come out on a couple of those things?
And kind of looking at Tennessee's last year, I mean, those numbers, like you said, they don't look good. They don't look good. You also had kind of Mariota kind of injured. He had that nerve thing. He just didn't quite look right. And you also had Blaine Gabbert starting three games. He's throwing to Tajae Sharpe, Corey Davis, Cameron Batson, and Tywan Taylor. I don't know. Like, to me, it seemed like, and I'm kind of working through that offense right now, but there's just I kind of liked what he was running, but there's some missed throws. There's a lot of drop balls. There's a lot of high throws. Like, I get the concerns about kind of what that offense did last year, or how that offense looked under him. I get it. And if you want to look at the numbers, and again, I've not gone through the whole season, so maybe this gets worse for me after week one. I don't know, but I don't know. It's hard. You look at those numbers, and honestly, I was kind of talking about this earlier with someone that it kind of reminds me a lot, and I guess it's just because you're drawing parallels, because why not? This is what we do. When McCarthy came in, he had, I think it was the last ranked offense with the Niners before he came over to the Packers, but he was running something that they liked. He was doing something good. They saw something in him, and that's what I'm choosing to believe with LaFleur. I think from what I've seen, I like his system. He seems like he's learned from a lot of really good people who know things. Last year just seemed like, I don't know, they just didn't have the pieces in that offense, I don't think. That's kind of what I'm going with right now. It doesn't look pretty, but I think his offense ultimately looks better than what the numbers show.
Yeah, I've seen some of the plays you were breaking down, and I've started looking at a little bit of his offense as well, and I like what I see, and we'll kind of go through that film review in just a moment. But again, kind of going over some of those concerns and some of his resume, Zach, you know, kind of how are you feeling about this?
I think if you really look past the year he had in Tennessee, then he's an extremely intriguing candidate. You really look past 2018 and what he did with the Titans, and echoing what Dusty said, with all the injuries and Mariota wasn't playing to his full capacity. He was dealing with a nerve issue. The offensive line was kind of bad across the board. But I think he has players, talented players, which the Packers do have. If he has them in place and they just find a way to stay on the field and stay healthy, and they're able to get kind of like a rotation going, they have healthy players, depth. I think that's the biggest key here. They got to have depth.
Yeah, and I think you guys bring up a lot of great points. And, I kind of haven't had a chance to give my gut reaction to this. And I really like this hire. This was somebody that I was excited about and thought about immediately when this position opened. I think he comes from a fantastic pedigree. I mean, pretty much to a T, what people have been asking for is a more creative offense. And the two offenses they tend to, either go to, I guess, besides Andy Reid's, is either Kyle Shanahan's or Sean McVay. And he obviously has tutelage under both of those offensive coordinators and both of those coaches. And I think he learned a lot. I think we saw some of it from Tennessee. But as you guys both mentioned, he did not have ideal circumstances in Tennessee. Their offensive line broke down. I think we're starting to learn more and more that Marcus Mariota may not be the guy that a lot of people expected him to be with that early pick. He hasn't, developed a ton. It took them a little bit of time to kind of get that running game going. And then, we saw Henry break out as the season went along. But I liked what I saw from the formations he ran, the bunch formations, a lot of motion. His offense builds off of previous plays. And I think that, again, stems from a lot of the things that you see from a Kyle Shanahan and a Sean McVay led offense. So there's a lot to like there. And, other coaches that I kind of fell in, I never fell in love with anyone throughout the process, but, you know, Eric Bieniemy before I found out some of the off-field concerns, and Josh McDaniels just because some of the upside was there. But this was a guy who was in my top two or three the entire time, and I just think there's a lot to like. And of course, there's going to be question marks, but there were question marks with every single candidate that was talked about for this position. Yep. There was no home run A-plus candidate, and really, truly, there never is. But I think he was always on top of that list. I think he really hits with where the current state of NFL is going, and I think it's going to be really exciting to see the offense that he puts together and how he forms this coaching staff. And it sounds like some of that's coming together already, which we'll kind of get to in just a moment. But one of the things we talked about yesterday was what in an ideal world Matt LaFleur needs to be successful. Zach, you kind of just went over depth. Yesterday, I mentioned a veteran defensive coordinator. Michelle had mentioned a stronger offensive line. You know, Zach, since you kind of touched base on depth already, Dusty, where do you come in on this? What would really make Matt LaFleur successful, whether it be a defensive coordinator, a coach, or some type of player that he needs on offense? What would really be best for him?
I'm not entirely sure. I've got some thoughts more when we start talking about film stuff, but kind of what I really like about him at a high level is he seemed like just looking at what he did in 17 with the Rams versus 18 with the Titans, is he did different or even kind of similar things, but with different personnel. So he seems like a guy who can kind of mix and match based on who he has. I do think depth is a big one, especially if you're looking at the Rams, kind of what they did this year. I know he wasn't there this year, but look what the Rams did this year. That they kind of not took a dive because they're still very good. But obviously when Kupp went out, that hurt their offense because they kind of need those high level guys. And I do think that he does need a couple very, very good guys at premier positions. But I mean, you could say that about most people, and there's not a whole lot of coordinators out there just making hay with just mush out there. So he needs depth. He needs a couple guys in high level positions, you know, give him a wide receiver, give him a running back. But I do think the biggest thing, and that's where I think, you know, Pettine is staying on. I can't remember if you touched on Andy. It looks like Pettine's sticking around. I really like that just because you do have a young offensive minded first time head coach. And then you've got a defensive head coach who has played the head coach role before. You're not saying, I know Pettine didn't do a great job as a head coach, but he seems like a guy who kind of learned a little bit, kind of knows what he did wrong, and has said since then he doesn't want to be a head coach really because of kind of what that entails. I feel like Pettine could really help guide LaFleur along a little bit, kind of avoid some of the pitfalls. Hey, this is kind of, you know, this is what I didn't do. This is what you kind of need to do. You get kind of one of those older guys that has some of that just experience, I think is super, super helpful there. So a defensive coordinator, especially one like Pettine that's been there before, I think keeping him is a really smart move. So I don't know. I don't know if that answered the question, but I'm done with my rambling at the moment.
No, that was perfect. And that was the thing that I brought up with Michelle yesterday as well, is that if there was one thing I think he could have really used as a veteran defensive coach / maybe even assistant head coach. And Mike Pettine certainly fills, you know, that role. He's a former head coach in the league. He's got a lot of veteran leadership. This defense seemed to really react to him very, very well. I think he's going to be a great presence, you know, for Matt LaFleur. And I just think when you're bringing in a 39-year-old coach who does not have any head coaching experience at any level, having that type of leader in your locker room who has that experience, I think is going to be, you know, endlessly important. So I think that's a huge, huge thing. And I think that's going to be a successful move. Besides depth, Zach, anything else that you think would really make the LaFleur regime successful?
I think just having Aaron Jones out there. I think you actually alluded to it on Twitter, kind of really echoed my thoughts as well, because, you know, we saw what he did in Tennessee with the run game and Derrick Henry, what he was able to do and how he utilized his running backs. So if Aaron Jones is out there and he's healthy and LaFleur can kind of incorporate him into what he's trying to do, and that's going to be something fun to watch. That's for sure. That would be my alternative option, but I'm still stuck on the depth. If he just has a good rotation of players, then that's going to be huge.
Yeah, and I think you're spot on there, because, you know, and as Dusty mentioned as well, he's going to use a ton of different formations. They're going to rotate people in and out. They want to be able to confuse opposing defenses and opposing defensive coordinators. And the more depth and the more weapons that he can have, the more looks he can give, the better he's going to be. So I think that would put him in a huge situation to be successful and really do some of the things that he does best as well. I think it was a huge injury that Delanie Walker was out earlier in the year for for them, because I think that would have been a huge weapon for him. And I think that offense really changed when he went down. So the more depth they can have, better, the better they're going to be unequivocally. Dusty, you started kind of watching the tape a little bit and obviously going through that first game and some of the things that he was doing. What were some of the things that stood out to you, and what do you think some of those things are that he'll bring to Green Bay?
Yeah, and actually, I kind of want to go back real quick just to 2017, because I did do last offseason. I kind of started to look at the Rams, which works out perfectly for this. So I looked at the Rams 2017 offense and what they did there, and kind of went through every single game and looked at passing concepts, and that's all awesome. And you can find that on Twitter if you so desire. But one of the things I really liked is just kind of looking at this first game. I see a lot of similar concepts from what he ran in LA, but it's with different personnel. That's why that's one of the things I kind of mentioned earlier that got me really excited about this, is like, you're seeing where in LA he was running a lot of kind of three wide, you know, obviously then with Gurley and maybe one tight end. He's doing the same thing with like three tight end sets. And so to me, that kind of shows like he's got these concepts, and they're tweaked a little bit, but he's got these concepts that he knows can work no matter who the personnel is. So it's not one of those. I know one of the things I'd heard about McDaniels was he basically wants to fit guys into his system, which was my complaint about Capers for years and years and years and years, was if you've got a system that's inflexible and you need these certain guys to do it, that's not a great system. And that's kind of what I heard about McDaniels. LaFleur seems like he can kind of tweak some of the stuff that works, but he can run it with different personnel, which is super exciting. So that was just the difference between 2017 and 2018. I thought was super, super interesting. So yeah, just kind of going through this first game of the 2018 season against the Dolphins, which, if I'm not mistaken, was the one that was delayed by like 6 hours because of lightning, and the Packers game started. You couldn't watch the Packers game in the beginning because of the start of it, and just a dumb game, just a dumb game. But it's really interesting watching it. Like what he did, I know a couple of things that really jumped out at me was a ton of motion. Just an ungodly amount of motion, which is great. And I know that Rodgers is not necessarily the biggest fan of motion. And so we'll see if that kind of holds, or if LaFleur says, no, we're doing this. And, you know, that kind of can show you maybe what the defense is looking to do a little earlier if you do motion. But I know it's a ton of motion, a ton of stuff with the running backs and tight ends. A lot of kind of crisscross routes. You mentioned earlier, Andy, where he kind of builds off stuff. He does a lot of that. He does a lot of run one thing to set up another thing. He does a lot of one of the things I love about the Rams offense is wheel routes. Man, do I love me some wheel routes. And guess what? LaFleur also loves wheel routes. I saw a lot of like kind of double post, double slant wheels, which was incredible. A lot of stuff that kind of had rub routes. He had one. I think that maybe the first one I posted tonight that I just absolutely adored was a bunch route, and you kind of had a curl at the sticks on third down, and then a guy kind of sneak out behind him, and so you're looking to pull those defenders up. There's a whole lot of, I mean, one of the things, and I think it changed a little this year, obviously, in Green Bay. I think not enough, but I just didn't think there's a whole lot of thought put into, not necessarily the offensive concepts, but how they work together, or where the personnel was, or down in distance, or any of that stuff. That was kind of one of my main problems, not necessarily what they're running, but kind of how and when they're running it. With LaFleur, over the past 2 years, I've seen a ton of thought just put into each play, and how people react to that play, what that play means in terms of down and distance, what that means in terms of who you have in there. There's a whole lot of misdirection. There's a whole lot of varied looks, kind of running the same stuff. There's a whole lot of show them one thing and then also kind of tweak that a little later and run something else for something down the line. I'm trying not to get too excited, but you know, watching, you know, a full year in 2017 and then just one game of 2018, it's hard for me not to get excited about this, just seeing what he's doing, seeing how he's doing it, seeing how he's adapting it to his personnel. And then you transfer that over to the Packers. And obviously, you know, as Zach mentioned, you got Aaron Jones. He's going to use Aaron Jones. I feel like a lone Jimmy Graham defender. He's going to use Jimmy Graham, I feel like, well. He's going to use those tight ends. We might get to see, Andy, hold your breath, a little Tanyan out there mixing it up, doing some stuff. I feel like with the personnel that the Packers have, I feel like he's going to be able to use that in a way that we've been begging to see that used for the past few years that we just haven't seen it. I realize I've gone on for a while, and I'm sure you've got thoughts as well, Andy, but I mean, good God, it's hard not to watch just what I've seen so far and that 2017 Rams season and not get hyped about this guy and what he's doing and how he's doing it and who he's doing it with. It's very exciting.
Yep, I agree. And Dusty, I'm going to be fully transparent here. I think you're going to be able to speak to this better than I will. But my thought on Mike McCarthy's offense and how it was built was that he had a specific plan on how he wanted to attack things. And while there were adjustments here and there, for the most part, he stuck to his plan and he believed that it was going to work and that he was going to force other teams to beat him in his plan. And I think that for the most part, and again, in today's day and age, in today's NFL, doesn't really work as well anymore. And I think you have to have innovative coaches who give defenses and defensive coordinators things that they have to constantly think about. We saw in the playoff game this past week, I believe it was, I'm going to lose my train of thought now on who it was. I think it was the Eagles that ran it, but they ran the fake screen to the one side, the fake screen to the other side, and then they threw it to the tight end in the middle of the field. And it was an awesome play. It was Dallas Goedert and it was Goddard Ertz, one of the two.
Goddard.
And he, you know, broke three tackles and ultimately the play call didn't really work a ton because the linebacker and the defensive backs were right there, but he broke three tackles. But it was just things like that because the defense had to think about three different things on that play before they actually, you know, could react to things.
My issue with kind of, sorry to cut you off, Andy. My issue with kind of what the Packers have done with that is they've shown that stuff. They've shown that specific play. The problem is that they don't do enough legwork. They did not do this past year enough legwork to properly set that up. If you've not shown enough of the fake screen to one side, fake screen to the other side, there's nothing to make them respect that. There's nothing to make teams kind of think, oh, they're doing this. Like you've almost got with the Packers, you had payoff plays with none of the lead up, which is super frustrating.
Yeah, and I think that's the real joy and the real pleasure of watching the Sean McVay and the Kyle Shanahan and hopefully the Matt LaFleur offenses as well, is you do get some of those window dressings. What is a power run now might be a screen to the other side later, or what's a fake reverse now might be a reverse later. It's one thing that sets up to another, and defenses constantly have to think. And I think that's the way of the future. I think that's the way things need, it's the way of the present, I should say, and the way things that, you know, need to be done. And hopefully that's the way that things will be done now in Green Bay. And it will give Green Bay that advantage that a lot of these other teams have had over the course of the last couple seasons.
Absolutely.
Zach, one of the things I wanted to ask you about a little bit is kind of how you felt about this process as a whole. So they interviewed 10 different candidates and they really just immediately made their decision and went with their gut and went with their guy. How did you feel, you know, Green Bay went about this process? They were really, besides Cleveland, they had the longest amount of time really to think about this. And really, I guess Cleveland was in the playoff race, I think, up until week 16. So, I mean, it's not like they were super focused on it at the time. But Green Bay had time to kind of think this through a little bit. But they interviewed their 10 guys, and then they immediately went with their decision. How did you feel this process went?
I'm actually glad you asked me that because I did want to address that a little bit. I feel like the entire process as a whole, I think they did their due diligence. I mean, they tackled Dan Campbell. They didn't interview Mike Munchak, but they got to Brian Flores, Josh McDaniels, Matt LaFleur, Pete Carmichael, Adam Gase, Todd Monken. They did their work here. And that's not even accounting for Jim Caldwell and Chuck Pagano, which I'm assuming was to satisfy the Rooney Rule, obviously, since those were the two guys they knocked out at the very beginning. But you know, they did their work, and I was really satisfied with the pool of candidates that they pulled away from. My only surprise was I was surprised by how early they picked their guy, that they landed on the floor and said, that's the guy we want. That's the guy we want coaching our football team for the foreseeable future. That's the guy we're gonna bank our legacy, our meaning, Mark Murphy, Brian Gutekunst. That's going to be the guy that we hinge our franchise on. That was the one thing that kind of surprised me, but we know Mike Pettine's safe, which is obviously really a really good sign because, you know, we don't there's no continuity. There's no form of cohesion having three different coordinators in 3 years. They brought aboard a guy who is going to keep Pettine. And I think that was a big positive with the four and a big reason why they stuck with him. And, you know, at the end of the day, I guess it doesn't really matter how long they take, but kind of if they feel like this is their guy. You know, if they're 100% confident that the floor is their guy and this is the guy they want leading their team, then you can't deny their trust. You know, you can't. It's instinct, I should say. But I also I was told by a source inside the Packers organization, apparently it's close to the organization, that McDaniels was the guy that's the clear-cut leading candidate, all that, and that ended up not being true. So words are fluid, all that nonsense, and I do want to apologize to anybody that's listening right now for any misled information. If I misled you, anything along those lines, but it's tough, man. He probably opted to stay in New England, or the Packers turned him away after LaFleur's interview. We'll probably never know, but yeah, I just wanted to get that kind of apology out in the open.
No, man, you're all good. I think, yeah, you know, obviously anytime you're counting on a source, it's a source and you can only go by what they're saying. So I don't think anyone's going to hold that against you, but I agree with you. And I think you brought up a great point that this is a massive, massive decision for Brian Gutekunst and for Mark Murphy. And it should be held in that regard. And I personally love the way that they attack this. And to me, they went outside the box with a lot of these candidates, both with some retreads and also with some names like a Todd Monken that, you know, weren't, you know, right at the immediate forefront to begin with. And I think they really went out of their way to make sure that they didn't really leave any stone unturned. There's a couple names out there that maybe I would have liked them to bring in, but nothing egregious. And I think that as soon as they found their guy, they went out and they attacked him. They know that there's 8 head coach openings out there, and they know that anything can happen at any given time. And when they found their guy, and they didn't wait to, oh, let's bring him back for a second interview, or let's hold off a little bit. Maybe we should bring in these 4 or 5 other candidates we didn't bring in the first time. They went with their gut. They interviewed the guy. They loved him. They brought him in, and they said, you know what, that's where we're going to go with. And personally, I'm in recruiting, and this is, you know, my day-to-day operations is interviewing people and kind of going through that process a little bit. And some of the biggest mistakes that I have seen is when you try to overthink things and you go through second interviews and you try to nitpick things. And some of the best decisions I've ever seen made are the ones where you interviewed them and you fell in love with them and you went with your gut. And maybe there was something that, you know, on paper you didn't think was maybe the right thing. And if you really nitpicked it to death, maybe you would have moved on. But those decisions that you trust your gut and you trust what you went through the process for in the first place are the ones that turn out being the best. And I'm kind of hoping that obviously turns out to be the case here as well. Dusty, any thoughts on that at all?
No, you guys covered it. I kept waiting for a second interview is coming up, but if they knew who they wanted, like you said, they pounced, they went for it. Zero issues. I don't really know how most of that process works, but like you said, I mean, they brought in a ton of guys, just a ton of guys they brought in, and they liked that. They liked who they liked, and you got to respect that. So yeah, nothing more to add.
Perfect.
Kind of like shopping for a new car. You know, you feel around, and then once you sit behind the wheel of the one car,
the 01 Chevy Prism. Like, that's I'm right, Zach. I know.
Yeah, you just, you know, it's the one, you know, some of them you kind of have second thoughts, you know, but the Packers with Matt LaFleur, that's their brand new car. They felt good about him.
Love it. Absolutely love it. So kind of some comments from around the web that I kind of wanted to read to you guys. The first one that really stood out to me, and I really like this a lot, was from Dan Orlovsky. He said, congrats to LaFleur. I've known the dude for 10 plus years now, played for him twice. I love the hiring. Dude's very bright, very creative, knows how to attack defenses, has had great teaching. And the biggest thing, he's going to coach the heck out of 12 and challenge him daily. So I really like that quote quite a bit. And I think that to me, that was the number one thing I wanted going into this, is somebody who was going to be able to challenge Aaron Rodgers, bring new creative ideas to the table, and really kind of play that mental game of chess with him as well. And from all reports, that's something that LaFleur, you know, knows his stuff on offense. He's a former quarterback. So I think him and Rodgers have the opportunity to build off of that and hopefully build a really strong relationship there. Trent Dilfer said LaFleur is great, learned from Shanahan's at creating free releases for wide receivers and tight ends. Space in secondary and explosive opportunities on play action by marrying the run game, wide receiver splits, shifts, motions, and backfield action. Also, the O-line will be more physical. So, Dusty, a lot of the things that you hit on earlier, you know, Trent Dilfer kind of echoing in his tweet. And then, Zach, I only wanted to bring this up because I know you're such a massive, massive fan of Andy Benoit. He said Packers have been criticized for an unimaginative offensive scheme. Now they've hired one of the NFL's highest regarded young offensive designers. So that was
I'm out now, Andy. after
yeah.
that.
Amount. Yeah, I'm not a fan of the hire anymore.
It is kind of a kiss of death a little bit. I do realize that. But
not a good sign, no.
It's actually the biggest question mark of his entire resume. I'm hoping that they asked him about that. We noticed that Andy Benoit is a big fan of yours. Can you explain that to us? apologies to Andy Benoit, maybe. So kind of just continuing on a little bit, we touched base on the defensive coordinator. It also sounded like they are going to be keeping some of the defensive staff as well. Of course, some of this is just kind of coming through and we don't have the full breakdown yet. And I mean, for goodness sakes, we don't even have an official announcement from the Packers that Matt LaFleur is the head coach. This is going to be a really funny podcast if something changes. But of course, it's all throughout Packers Nation, all the blogs, all the Adam Schefters and Ian Rappaports of the world, that he's going to be the head coach. And by all accounts, Mike Pettine is going to be that defensive coordinator. Some of the main names on that defensive staff: Joe Witt Jr., of course, is their pass game coordinator. Jerry Montgomery, the defensive line coach. Jason Simmons, the secondary coach. Patrick Graham, the run game coordinator and linebackers coach. We talked about Pettine a little bit already, but do you think this is the right move to not only bring back Pettine, but bring back the majority of the defensive staff? I'll let either of you start.
It's just from my perspective, I think it's tough to tell for me. Like you said, it's so early. The contract, as far as we tell, has not actually been signed. There's been no official announcement. So we don't know what's going to happen in the days and months. But to me, it does seem like if you're keeping Pettine around, and maybe he's just going to let Pettine kind of just, you do your side of the ball, I'll do my side of the ball. It would kind of make sense that those guys would not move on. And I don't know enough about kind of what a lot of those guys do or how they are to pass any judgment. If they pass kind of Pettine and LaFleur here, that's fine by me. But it seems like it makes sense. If the defensive coordinator is saying, it makes sense that most, if not all, of the additional staff would be staying as well.
Zach, anything to add?
Yeah, I'm a fan of keeping Pettine. Like I mentioned earlier, you have that continuity. You don't want to have three different coordinators in three seasons, just because, you know, that wigs the young players out, you know, and it is a young defense. You got a lot of young up-and-coming players there who are coming off their rookie seasons, and you're going to have even more come the spring and moving into the summer. So having Pettine there, obviously, that's a big plus. But I personally would kind of scrap the rest of, you know, kind of those assistants. But obviously, I'm not the one to make a call on another guy's job or anything like that. But I feel like a fresh start with Pettine and LaFleur and some of those other guys, kind of rebuilding some of that staff from the ground up, I think that could be beneficial, because I just think a complete new look is needed. You know, some of those guys have been there for a good while now, you know, and the Packers defense hasn't been a strength by any means, even with Pettine last season. Yeah, they had their flashes. They had their stints of potential last season, but they struggled at times. And obviously they have a couple rookies playing corner. They had zero safety presence for a large part of the season. I would argue that changed when Tremont Williams stepped in, but that's another story. Yeah, I just think a fresh look from the ground up could be good here, you know, hiring some new faces.
Yeah, I agree with, honestly, both of you, and it wouldn't really shock me or offend me if they went in either direction. I really like them holding on to Joe Witt Jr., and I think he's a very smart coach, and if they can hold on to him, I do like that quite a bit. But, you know, if they want to go in a different direction and, you know, maybe they keep Pettine, but LaFleur has some of the say and some different assistants that he wants in, I think that could work. If he's going to give Pettine control of the defense, I'd probably like at that point to have Pettine have say in who his assistants are. But I think those two can work together on that. But either one is honestly fine. I liked what the defense put together. I thought when they had really their full set of players, which was very, very few and far between. But when they actually had Daniels and Clark and Jaire Alexander and King and some of those guys actually playing together, I thought the defense looked good. I thought he was creative. By the end of the season, when all of those guys were out, you know, it was just a shell of itself. And Kyler Fackrell was the best defender on the team. And that just goes in and of itself. By not allowing 50 points a game at that point, it was a huge success for the defense. So I'm good with either. And it'll be interesting to see how they kind of fill out that staff. But jumping over to the offensive side, Who are some offensive coordinators that kind of come to mind that he could potentially bring in? I'll throw a few names out there. Some of these guys are probably going to get head coaching jobs or stay with the team that they're at. But Todd Monken, of course, was one of the top coaching candidates for them. If he doesn't, get a head coaching position, maybe they'd be interested in him for offensive coordinator. Freddie Kitchens from Cleveland, if they move on from that staff and he doesn't get a head coaching job, he could be looking for a new offensive coordinator position. Sean Ryan is the quarterback's coach in Houston. I've been a huge fan of his work. John DeFilippo, kind of an interesting name. Obviously, he was fired from Minnesota. I would normally have not been a fan of this, but I think he actually has a lot of really bright concepts. And when you marry those concepts with what LaFleur is going to bring to the table, I think you could maybe bring some of that Andy Reid type offense along with the Shanahan and McVay offense and really kind of create some unique things. And especially knowing that DeFilippo wouldn't be the one calling the plays in this scenario, I think he could be a name to keep an eye on. Either Zach Taylor or Shane Waldron from the Rams, neither of them are technically offensive coordinators, so it could potentially be a promotion for either of them to move to an offensive coordinator position. Mike LaFleur, his brother, is actually a wide receiver and passing game coordinator for the 49ers. And then, of course, you've got the names like Cliff Kingsbury, Adam Gase. There are a lot of very, very bright offensive minds that are out there that would potentially be available for an offensive coordinator position, or at least potentially could be. Maybe a couple names that stand out to you. Dusty, I'll start with you.
I had my eye on when it was McDaniels. I had my eye on McDaniels Gase pairing. I thought it would just be tremendous. And if Gase could be offensive coordinator, I'd be all for that. That'd be amazing. He was top three or four for me for head coach. So if that was offensive coordinator, like you said, very bright offensive mind, I'd be all for that. I kind of had Zach Taylor in mind, like you mentioned, out of LA, out of the Rams, worked together with the Rams as a quarterback coach when LaFleur left for Tennessee last year. Just based on obviously what they had done there and what's been going on there, and kind of between 2017 and 2018. I liked what I saw at Goff in 2017. You mentioned Andy, big step up from 2016. He went from a bust to, hey, this guy looks like he can play a little bit. I wasn't super high on him. He seemed like he was, pretty good arm, a good release, but couldn't really do much if the first couple reads weren't there. Like if the timing was gone, he was kind of lost a little bit. So it's kind of more of a system than him. I thought he took a big step up this year as well. And part of that's natural progression, but it also shows, I think, that Taylor is doing something right out there as well. So I'd be fine with Taylor. DeFilippo, I kind of soured on as a head coach candidate just because he was out in Minnesota, basically because he wouldn't run the ball. There's a thousand different reasons why I believe that's wrong, but that was one of the things with McCarthy, was that they had Aaron Jones back there and you're not running as much as you probably should. And so that scared me a little bit. But as you mentioned, Andy, and I didn't think about it until you just mentioned it, kind of marrying those together, kind of marrying what LaFleur has done with his running backs and DeFilippo, I think that could be really good. So if we're going, I'll throw Kingsbury out there as well, because I don't know why not, but I would go in order, I think, Gase, Taylor, DeFilippo, Kingsbury would be the top four for me.
All right, Zach?
I'm definitely leaning in the direction of Freddie Kitchens, just because I think what he did in Cleveland last year as the offensive coordinator, and I mean, he was the running backs coach and the assistant associate head coach as well, so he was handling multiple duties. What he was able to do with that offense with Baker Mayfield, a rookie quarterback, is pretty damn impressive. So I think that was it was impressive. He has a good resume behind him, and also Dusty's candidate, Zach Taylor, or one of his candidates, I should say. But yeah, I also love what he was able to do in Los Angeles as a quarterback's coach, as the wide receivers coach. He is one of the minds behind that offense last 2 years and what they've been able to do. He's been one of the driving forces behind it. So really, if you could pick anybody from Sean McVay's tree, like the Packers have already done by hiring LaFleur, if they can get anybody from that staff and kind of implement them as an offensive coordinator, then that alone in itself would be helpful.
There's a lot of really great choices. I like the directions that you guys are thinking about. And I think that's one of the most exciting things is that there are so many great names out there, and he could go in a lot of different directions and marry some of those great concepts. And it's just so nice knowing that we've got this great offensive mind, you know, leading the team already, and anyone that he could kind of get in there to even help out a little bit more is only going to be a bonus at this point. And I really like the marriage of Pettin and LaFleur already. So this has the opportunity to even, you know, kind of add icing into the cake a little bit. I think one of the main remaining questions that we have yet to talk about, and I think it's one of the most important ones, is how is this relationship going to work with Aaron Rodgers? So you've got Matt LaFleur, a few years older than Aaron Rodgers. Whether it's appropriate or not, and whether it's correct or not, we've now got a lot of questions of how Aaron Rodgers kind of handled those last couple of years of the Mike McCarthy relationship. Was he kind of going rogue and calling plays on his own? And I think this is going to be a major question on how these two work together. And from all reports, Matt LaFleur has been a guy who's been a little bit of a quarterback whisperer. He's worked great with Matt Ryan. Kirk Cousins has had great things to say. You know, so everywhere he's gone, the quarterback's really been successful, and it seems to have worked out well. But how do you think this relationship is kind of going to work? And Zach, I'll start with you.
We saw how he was handling his relationship with McCarthy. You know, he would take the subtle jabs at him in his press conferences. There was the constant reporting about their split, you know, and how they're battling each other, which is natural. You've been with this guy for 13 seasons now. You know, the arguing, the combativeness, it's natural. The thing is, though, when we saw McCarthy fired on December 2nd after that loss to the Cardinals and Joe Philbin come in as the interim coach, the Packers played the Falcons the following week, and Aaron Rodgers looked like he was enjoying himself. Like, he was enjoying being out there on the field. And the same thing later against the Jets in New York. He looked like he was genuinely enjoying being out there on the field playing this game. And I think that was just a big takeaway from that game. I mean, you had the overtime victory, the last second touchdown to Devontae Adams. That was great, but the biggest takeaway for me was just how much fun he looked like he was having. Like, he was genuinely enjoying himself, and we hadn't seen that all season from him. He genuinely looked like he was having fun. So that was just with Joe Philbin too. So with a new guy, a new coach, I think the biggest thing is just that LaFleur is going to be able to challenge Rodgers. He's going to challenge his mind. He's going to kind of really work him. He's going to make him kind of, he's going to coach him. He's going to do what McCarthy hasn't really been able to do the last few seasons. And like Roger has said multiple times, he wants to be coached. He desires to be coached. And I think LaFleur is going to be able to do that. So that's the biggest thing here, just expecting them to mesh and hoping that they mesh. Because if they don't, then this hire is gone to the crapper.
Dusty, what about you, bud?
Let me start off. I'm going to jump on a little soapbox for a second. This is about nothing that Zach said. Just to get that out of the way early, maybe it's just Twitter, man, which can be a lovely place or just an absolute cesspool. But the amount of people who have turned on Rodgers completely this year is preposterous. There's a lot of people. He can't be coached. He's a coach killer. He can't do it. He was with McCarthy for 13 years. He's not a coach killer. It seemed like one of those things that the relationship ran its course. I mean, it's been repeated ad nauseum, the Bill Walsh thing where, you know, no one should be at any place for longer than 10 years, which there are exceptions to that. Obviously. I don't believe McCarthy was one of them. I think part of it is Rodgers needs a new voice. But I just want to say, if you've turned on Rodgers and have said, you know, they need to get rid of this guy, his attitude, blah, 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 just knock it off, man. Like, give it more than 1 year before you start throwing your Hall of Fame quarterback who has given you a ton of amazing years and moments under the bus. Let's calm down. Let's everyone just calm down. So to follow up on that, I mean, like Zach said, I mean, he's got someone that's in there that's going to challenge him. It's going to challenge his mind. That's going to kind of allow him to kind of see things differently, to kind of maybe get in his face a little bit when he needs to, maybe just say, hey, listen, look at these numbers that the Rams did when I was there. Just look at the offenses I've done. Look at the random different things I have done with different personnel groupings in different spots, and just just give it a chance. Just give it a chance. He's going to be presented with new concepts. It's a new voice. I think that alone is, we're going to see a renewed Aaron Rodgers next year. And I think this is something I just kind of was thinking about. There's the Gunslinger book that Perlman wrote a couple of years ago about Favre. And one of the things in there I know was kind of deterioration of Favre's relationship with guys in the locker room, and just in that he had gotten older. He'd kind of aged out a little bit, not aged out, but you know, he didn't have a whole lot of guys he could kind of relate to. And I think we're seeing that with Rodgers now. You know, he's in his mid-30s. He's in there with the guys that are a bunch of, you know, especially with a system that had been drafted and developed. You got a bunch of guys in their kind of early to mid-20s. I am 38, and when I have to talk to people who are like in their like 23, I have no idea. I have zero idea how to relate to those people. So I get it. I mean, what I'm saying is, me and Aaron Rodgers are basically the same person. So that's the point. But I think having a guy, you know, I get that their ages are close together. I kind of get that. But there's also something to be said, I think, for a guy who is just a few years older than him that can maybe relate to him on a level that some of the guys can't. That is also your coach that kind of knows what you're supposed to be doing and kind of wants to get you to a certain place. That is kind of a quarterback whisperer. You know, he's been as a quarterback coach, relating to a guy like Aaron Rodgers, who's obviously a very bright mind and also around his same age, that maybe you can relate to him about other things as well. I feel like there is a possibility for a very, very strong bond to be formed with them early that can only help them. I feel like their relationship could be very, very close. I mean, you see that with, you know, it's obviously younger, but you see that with McVay and Goff. They seem they kind of seem like buddies. You know, McVay's obviously a little older, but I think when you can get a guy like that is whispering in your ear, that is your coach, but is also your offensive coordinator, but you know, hey, I can bounce ideas off this guy and it's not going to like erupt into a fight, or he's not going to say this is my way or do that. I think there's something to be said for that. So, I mean, I think all those factors combined, it just, the more I think about it, the more I'm excited, and the more I think that kind of a younger guy is kind of the way to go, that I'm, again, we don't know how he's going to be as a head coach, but it just all the signs point to this being really, really fun with Rodgers and LaFleur. I think they're going to get on. I think we're going to see a renewed Rodgers next year. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
That's certainly the hope. I think obviously what Green Bay needs to do, like they did for Brett Favre, is just hire his best friend to be the backup quarterback, like they did with Doug Peterson for like a decade after he could no longer play football.
So Jordy Nelson is backup quarterback? Cool.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, bring in Jordy as the backup quarterback.
Whether number four.
Jordy Nelson or Matt Flynn, they need to bring back a friend for Aaron Rodgers so he has somebody he can relate to. But anyway, no, I agree with you 100%, Dusty. I think that's certainly the hope, is that they have somebody that they can relate to Aaron Rodgers. As I mentioned earlier, he played the quarterback position, even if it obviously wasn't at the NFL level. I think they're going to hopefully be able to relate. And I think he is going to be able to challenge Aaron Rodgers with a ton of different concepts and things that he hasn't done before. And I think Aaron Rodgers is honestly kind of going to like that. And if he doesn't, buy in, then it's going to be a problem. And we're probably going to see it take, unfortunately, a turn for the worse. But I agree with you, Dusty. I think we need to see it play out before we start labeling anyone a coach killer or an insubordinate or anything like that. Let's give it just a little bit of time before we jump to any conclusions. All right. So last but not least, let me ask you guys just really quick. Zach, how would you grade this move? And do you think they got it right?
I would give it a B+ for right now. Actually, I'll give it a B. I'll give it a B right now, mainly just because, like you just said, it's a little too early to judge any of this right now. So I will say that high grade, because I consider B a high grade. That high grade is just based off of how much work they did in bringing all those candidates in, how much work they put into the whole process before they finally narrowed down to their guy and they found the guy that they wanted. So, and it, you know, looking back on everything that LaFleur has done, and you know, thanks to Dusty also for explaining a lot of that, a lot of things that LaFleur likes to do offensively and what he could bring to Green Bay, you know, it helps sell the concept even more. It helps you sell wanting to buy into this guy. And you know, and that's just me. You know, that's just some stupid writer out here in California. You know, the biggest thing is getting Aaron Rodgers to buy into it. So right now, I would give it a B, but there's a good chance by September, by October, that could be bumped up to an A really quick.
Dusty, what about you?
Yeah, I know. I think I'm about the same. It's really, I mean, like you said, it's early, man. It's tough to tell right now. I'm probably a little higher. I'll give it give an A minus right now, just slightly above where Zach was. Where it, and honestly, man, all it's going to take to jump me up to an A plus is Aaron Rodgers just for someone catching Aaron Rodgers on a mall and him saying, "Yeah, I really like him." I'd be like, "Okay, A plus, like he's on board." Like it's not going to take much to push me over the edge. But no, I think, I mean, there's obviously risk in this and hiring kind of a first time head coach. There's a lot of unknowns, and so really, it's tough to tell, and it's tough to give a final grade until we kind of until the first year at the very least. But you know, right off a gut reaction, how I'm feeling right now, yeah, A minus. I think it's a good hire. I think he's a good choice. A very good offensive mind. I think Pettine in there kind of certainly bumps that up a little bit. But yeah, I'm all in, man. I think it's a very good hire.
I'm going to even you guys out exactly. I'm going to give it a solid B plus. Really like, you know, the hire. I like how they went about it. I like that once they found him, they were aggressive in getting him. Time will tell. Of course, it's silly to, you know, kind of give it a grade at this point because, you know, who knows? He hasn't even coached a preseason game yet. He hasn't even given a press conference for the Packers, but I like the direction they went in. You know, I think it's where the NFL is going. And I'm excited to see how this team is going to mesh. I'm excited to see Aaron Rodgers with a brand new offense, with a really smart offensive mind. I'm excited to see the defense progress under a second year with Mike Pettine. And I just think it's the right direction. And now they've got, you know, the ability to go out and fill out this staff. Like I said, offensive coordinator has the opportunity to be another huge bonus as someone they can add to this team. They've got two early first round draft picks. They've got a lot of huge decisions to make coming up with retaining their own players, a lot of money to spend in free agency. So it is going to be an exciting off season as a whole. And I think they really did a great job of starting it off on the right foot and kind of building a lot of excitement towards next year. Guys, thank you so much for joining me. I know it was kind of last minute notice. I really, really appreciate your time tonight. Any final thoughts, Dusty?
No, dude. It's exciting to have a coach. It's a little scary, but yeah, the playoffs aren't even over yet. And I'm already excited for the 2019 season now. So, yeah, I don't know. Happy to talk to you guys. Andy, I've talked to you before. Zach, I think this is my first time actually talking to you outside of a very, very, very short pre-draft party chat. But, mm-hmm. Yeah, awesome hanging out with you, Zach. I mean, I love your work. Andy, obviously love your work. And so talking to you now has just been amazing. And I love, Zach, my favorite thing about you is that you are Team 5, guys. always awesome talking to you guys. You guys, I really look up to you guys. You guys do amazing work. It's been awesome to be here. So, yeah, that's all I
appreciate
got.
Appreciate that, Dusty. Well,
we could both easily say the same thing about you, man.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Zach, any final thoughts on your end?
Really just it's going to be a really exciting offseason. You know, and like Dusty said, it's going to be kind of scary too because, you know, we haven't experienced this in I should say 12 years, 13 years. So it's going to be really interesting. It's going to be really fun. I'm kind of more so looking forward to the whole draft process. And then you got free agency. It's going to be exciting. And as for the both of you and Andy, you know, I've followed you for the longest time. You know, we followed each other for the longest time. And I've watched you kind of rise through the ranks to what you are now. And you're only just going to get better at what you do, man. And I'm extremely proud of you. And I'm just happy to be along for the ride. And Dusty, you're gonna catch on somewhere big someday, you know, man. I can tell you that for sure. Just the grind you put in, it doesn't go unnoticed, okay, by anybody. I can tell you that right now, and I promise. All right?
Well, thank you. So, I appreciate that, brother.
Yeah, no, both of you guys, man. I really enjoyed this, and I'll look forward to next time, you know. Hopefully we can do this again sometime soon.
Appreciate it, guys. And just for the record, I think you're both the worst.
wow. I'm tired. This was a mistake.
No, you guys are fantastic. Thanks so much for joining me. This has been absolutely fun. Huge day for the Packers franchise. For those of you who have not had a chance yet, make sure to go back and listen to yesterday's podcast again. Michelle Bruton did an amazing job. You're going to want to definitely check that out. Also, again, a huge thank you to Zach and Dusty for coming on short notice and discussing today's big news. Make sure to follow Zach at Zach A. Jacobson on Twitter. Follow Dusty at Dusty Evely. You can follow me at Scotty Sports. Of course, follow the podcast at Packaday Podcast. I would be remiss not to shout out Professor Benjamin Wright, who gave me those amazing Omaha beef statistics, both the name of the mascot as well as the name of the dance team. So thank you, Professor Wright. This is only the beginning. We are going to have you completely covered here at the Packaday Podcast. Make sure to listen tomorrow as Nick Schmitz and Jacob Westendorf continue to kind of break down the breaking news. There may be a press conference tomorrow. Who knows what's going to be happening, but you want to check back with them tomorrow to see everything that's happening. Thank you for listening. As always, this again is a huge, huge day for the Packers franchise. Let's hope that this is the move that helps return the Packers to greatness. I'm certainly thinking and hoping that it could be. Until next time, thanks for listening. We've only got a short 8 months before the next Packers regular season game to see how this starts to turn out. And in the meantime, go Pack, go.
From the 16 of New York, first down, goal to go. Rodgers in the shotgun, Williams to his left. Here's the snap. Rodgers, clean pocket, throws the middle of the end zone. Snap to Wild.
Oh, yes! And taken by Jackson in the end zone for a touchdown.
Geronimo
and
one Allison.
By Geronimo Allison. Josh Jackson, the rookie, recovers in the end zone in a Lambeau leap to the north end zone stand. The Packers have a 6-0 lead.
Pepperd on third down and three in the shotgun. Packers showing a blitz, and here they come. Pepperd looking, hit as he throws it, deep down the right sideline, and intercepted
on the play. Spectacular interception by Kevin King at the 9-yard line of Green Bay.
Snap to Rodgers, looking right. Throws the right side, St. Brown makes the catch inside the 38 bounds. Oh, he reached back to gather it in, using all 6'5 of his frame. Tumbled out of bounds inside the 30 of the 28-yard line. Hunter Bradley the snap. J.K. Scott down on one knee, arm extended. Here it is. Placement made. Kick is up.
It is good. It is good. Mason Crosby delivers the dagger. 1 week after his worst day ever, he delivers the dagger tonight.
Third and five, 13-yard line of Atlanta. Snap, Ryan, looks right, close, right there.
Intercepted to the house, Bashaud Breeland. Touchdown, Green Bay Packers.
19-yard interception return, and it's 16-7 Packers. And Rodgers looks it over, takes the snap, blitz on, they pick it up, lofting it out.
They got him. 40 yards.
Single back offense behind Aaron Rodgers. He ducks it under center. From the 29 of Green Bay, and here's the handoff off the middle. Big hole.
Straight ahead. It is Aaron Jones. Off to the races. To the 20. To the 15. To the 10. Down the left sideline. And he's out of bounds. Inside the 10 of the 5-yard line of Miami. Aaron Jones with a first. 67 yards.